Board is ready to hear argument in 040115, Freedom Newspapers of Texas versus Coronado and Cantus.
May I please report, Mr. John Bussing, to present argument for the petitioner. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes to reply.
May I please report? If left standing, the decision by the Court of Appeals in Edinburgh would have trial judges applying summary judgment rules in a way that expose headline and lead paragraph news writing to the risks and costs of a jury trial in almost every public official by the point.
We've been down that road.
I'm well aware of
it. So you're asking us to overrule our case law?
I'm asking, and Brownsville Herald is asking, Justice O'Neill, that not only the Court of Appeals decision be reversed in this case, and summary judgment.
On the point you just raised, you ask us to reverse, even though we've visited this before, you want us to overrule those cases. Well, we would have to do what you say.
Our view, stated well in our briefs, is that under the current law, there is no tribal issue of falsity or actual malice here. And that for that reason alone, based on certainly the recent decisions that have been decided by this court in Forbes and Isaacs in particular, that whatever confusion may have reigned in the Court of Appeals' mind that led it to find a tribal issue of actual malice have certainly been laid to rest. So the Brownsville Herald thinks this is court doesn't need to do anything more than apply the analysis that's already been announced to find that summary judgment should have been entered in favor of the paper in this case. But yes, Your Honor, if the policy underlying the statute by which appeal was taken to this court in this case is to be given its full effect, then an adjustment to the rules by which summary judgments are decided, at least in cases involving the falsity of headlines crafted by the brave souls who toil on copy desks and newspapers around the country and make word choices about how to describe ambiguous, what I'll call, political doublespeak on the campaign trail, need to be adjusted so that there's protection against these cases being tried to juries where there's no basis for doing that. And this court in the last 5 years has been patient to consider the claims of public officials in almost a half a dozen cases and has parsed out evidence in the record to try to make the right constitutional call on whether these cases ought to reach juries. And in 4 out of 5 that I know of, this court ultimately concluded those cases shouldn't go to juries or shouldn't involve any claim that the speech in question was actionable. And yet we're back here again. So our position is that the Court of Appeals decision, when it in particular talks about the plaintiff's contention that the headline read in context with the entire October 5th news report, is false. Misses the mark badly when it talks about using a reader's poll, essentially, to raise an issue of falsity. This is not the kind of call, as this court has recently described in decisions as recently as Isaac, that allow that sort of evidence to raise a jury question, falsity, actual malice, or otherwise.
The troublesome thing here is the first line really is not true. I mean, the constable did not say what the report orders that he's had. No Anglo could ever be sheriff. Cantu said Wednesday. That's just not true. That's what the reporter thought he said, which certainly one could understand. You said the doublespeak or the amicus uses code language. Certainly, if you were sitting there, you might think this is just a proxy for comment that he doesn't want to make, but gets the idea across. But it is not true that he said it.
And you're right, Justice Hackett, and we never took the position, we think, in the way we punctuated the story, the headline in particular, that we were trying to deliver a message to the reader that this was a direct quotation. Had we done that, we would have used quotation marks. So therefore, we're not claiming that it was, and that's where you get into the need that Justice Stewart, in the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Time v. Pape, said, now, determining truth in a context like this doesn't lend itself very easily to the usual test. This is fairly complicated stuff. When you take a look, especially at the transcript of the debate at the public library in Brownsville between the two candidates in this case, about how full of doublespeak it is, and how ambiguous it is. There has to be a different test applied to that. Otherwise, it's too easy to find a tribal issue of falsity. It's too easy to say that's not substantially true. We think in this case that call could be made under the current rules because we told the readers, if you read down into the story and used quotation marks, here's what the sheriff did say.
Well, it may be doublespeak. I mean, there's an argument that way, but could it also be, shouldn't the reporter have understood this to be, I am bilingual. I can speak, you know, this is a Spanish community. Some people speak, you know, only Spanish or mostly Spanish, and it has nothing to do with whether I'm white or not, you know, Anglo or not. It's that I can relate to the people who the department would serve.
I agree, Chief Justice Jefferson, that characterization could have been a headline. And for reasons that the Time v. Pape court found rational interpretation to be the test in a case like this, bilingual would fit within the bounds of rational interpretation, but so would no Anglo can be sheriff. You have to have that flexibility or you're going to be second-guessing word choices.
And you're here to argue that the First Amendment protects the most scurrilous reading a reporter can put it because that's what you put in the headline so you sell the papers.
I would say there's a point, Justice Brister, after which you're no longer in the realm of rational interpretation. If we had said in this case, because there are other things reported in the article, that the sheriff accuses his opponent of buying off the Texas Rangers to investigate him, then maybe that's
as long as it's a possible interpretation, the newspaper can choose to use as the headline the worst interpretation, the one it thinks will stir up the most controversy. And that's protected by the First Amendment.
If it fits a rational interpretation test, and we think that it does here.
So
under the
let me ask you if this does.
Then yes.
Constable Cantu showed himself a racist last night in the debate at the Brownsville Library. Would that be a rational interpretation? That's what everybody's getting at.
If the reporter had...
That's pretty stout.
And I think in the rough and tumble political campaign trail life, that sort of characterization, interpretation of a candidate's remarks has to be tolerated.
Well, I think
otherwise we're glued to the tracks.
Well, it may be tolerated in the sense that that's what I think he said, and I can defend that. But it's another thing to say that's what he did say. If we're dealing with substantial truth, it seems to me there's got to be some reasonably objective standard, and opinion and all this stuff that we're going to protect other ways, that's fine, but the truth is the truth.
The truth is the truth in a lot of settings. I agree, Justice Hatfield. If we reported that an earthquake rocked the valley, then that's a direct account of an event that can be observed. If you're trying to interpret what somebody said in the ways in which public policy issues are debated in this country, it's not so simple. And the Time v. Pape Court went to great lengths to say, determining truth in this setting, isn't as easy as that. And we've got to come up with this test that gives more room for news reports of what people are trying to say is said in press conferences, in that case, in a Civil Rights Commission report, and the like. And if we don't have the bandwidth in that shape, we're going to make copy editors constrained pretty much to play it safe, and let's just put in the headline exactly what the candidate said.
Well, they have lots of protection with actual mouse.
It's another layer of what we have to go through in all these cases and what this court has so patiently done for a number of years now, and that is, the first line of defense falls away in these public official cases, so we're into parsing out a record about whether there's enough or any legally sufficient evidence of actual malice to get to a jury, and almost invariably, this court and other courts like it conclude that it doesn't cut the mustard. And then we've spent a lot of time getting here, finding out that the public official had no actionable defamation claim, and we're back to start another one on the long road here again. And so I guess the Brownsville Herald's view is we think the current rules protect what it did very clearly, that the summary judgment motion should have been granted. But in order to give a full effect to the public policy interests that support the statute that allows this appeal to be made from a denial of a summary judgment motion, and some adjustment in the current rules ought to be made so that we're not litigating these claims over and over again at great cost to the litigants and at great expense in terms of judicial resources to this court and the lower courts. So there are those points we've made that...
Why can't you use an expert? You say because it's subjective, but we use... Expert testify in courts every day in Texas about what the husband was thinking, what the wife, whether she's a good mother or not, how she treats parenting. Criminal cases, they come in. Noted expert, now deceased, I think he's deceased, testify in every case that... I've looked at the criminal defendant's record, and he's going to do it again.
Well, maybe we'll get to a day when someone will conclude that there's pathology there in the way the news reports are put together.
Could you testify? I've read all this reporter's stories. I've seen his resume. I've talked to him a couple of times, and I think, actual malice.
I think this is fundamentally different, Justice Heck, in that we're asking... the plaintiff's asking an expert to divine whether somebody believes truth or falsity. And the test is that there has to be some evidence of knowledge that it was false before it was published. And that sort of thing simply defies the abilities of experts to get inside a mind and talk about it.
Well, perhaps so, but what about actual malice?
The test for determining whether you've got actual malice is, as you know, Justice Heck, is whether or not there is a serious doubt about the truth of what's being published. And in order to do that, you have to get inside the minds at the time of publication, mind you, which is another problem with the way that the Court of Appeals analyzed this. You have to get inside the mind of the publisher at the time of publication and find out if those doubts existed. This court knows from its decision in Bentley, that only where there was pretty clear and direct evidence that there was that doubt and it was expressed before the broadcast, could that, in combination with some other factors, even come close to creating a tribal issue of actual malice. But here, we're not anywhere near that.
Thank you. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Barry Zinn will present argument to the respondent.
May it please the court. I'd first like to focus on what we believe the questions the court should ask itself in resolving the two issues before, substantial truth and actual malice. Because there's some dispute over actually what the test is for both of these things. On substantial truth, we think the questions are this. First, what is the gist of the argument? The second is, what is the truth? What was actually said? The third thing is, does that gist differ from the truth? And the fourth thing is, if it does, is it more detrimental to the reputation of Sheriff Cantu than the truth would have been, had they published the truth? We think those are the four questions that speak to substantial truth, regardless of whether you think this is a direct quotation, a paraphrase, or whatever.
Newspaper is not required to publish, republish the debate quote for quote in full.
No, but
So they're going to have to give a gist of what happened in the debate.
Yes, but they didn't do that.
Well, and that's because the term bicultural cannot be interpreted by a reasonable hearer to be code for non-Anglo.
Well, their witnesses admitted that it is a positive term and that it is not a code word, essentially. This code word, by the way, appeared for the first time in the reply brief on the merits before this court and then in the amicus that was filed Friday. That's the first time they've claimed that these were code words. But in any case, their own witnesses admitted that bicultural was a positive, conclusive term and not, and essentially not as how they presented it.
Well, what if the reporter was simply mistaken on that difference? I just, golly, you're probably right, but I didn't appreciate the distinction. And so, whoops, big mistake. How do you get beyond actual malice?
Well, but that's not the record in this case, because the reporter, Pierce, testified that he was asked what bicultural meant to him, and he said that it was a positive term, that in fact it was a positive attribute for somebody to have who was running for sheriff of Cameron County. It was an inclusive term, and that after the debate, he didn't think Cantu was a racist. Yet, he wrote a headline in Leaf that said the exact opposite. Now, that's some evidence, one, that it was not the substantial truth, and second, that's some evidence that it could be that he had serious doubts, if not knew, that what he was writing wasn't true.
Well, but if couldn't you use any race instead of Anglo? Couldn't you say name it, because that's not bicultural. Whatever it is, it's not bicultural. Anglo, the connotation of that term is that it's not bicultural. Does it always have to be a racial epithet in some way?
Well, no. A bicultural, in the abstract, it could be a German American. It could be any kind of American. Or it could be any. I mean, bicultural is not limited to Hispanic and Anglos. I mean, it speaks to any two cultures.
But in this context, it
right. In this context, we're talking about.
And in this context, he was the majority race.
Sure. And
if the shoe was on the other foot, this was somebody white in Houston saying, I'm more inclusive. I'm more broad-minded. I know more people in the community than this minority black person. We wouldn't stand for that. A newspaper would scream and howl about that, wouldn't they?
Yes, but that's not what Conrado Cantu said. He said, in order to go out in the neighborhoods and understand what's going on, you need to be bicultural. And you need to understand what bicultural means in the Valley. They have a museum that's called the Bicultural Museum. Bicultural has a meaning, and it's not the meaning that the reporter put on it. And their own witnesses admitted that that's not the meaning that they understand it to be. And Conrado Cantu testified that that's not what he meant. He meant the meaning that the newspaper people testified it means. It is a positive, inclusive term. If you allow a newspaper to print what a candidate said based on what they believe a code word means in politics, you have open season on political candidates, and you will, instead of opening and furthering
open.
That open and robust debate,
it's been open a long time.
All candidates talk in code words, don't they?
But there's a difference here. If the paper had written an op-ed piece that said, we think Conrado Cantu is using code words and he's a racist, they could do that. If they wanted to report that his opponent, Terry Vincent, thought that Conrado Cantu is using code words and was a racist, they could do that. But they can't take the words of the opponent, they can't take their own opinion, and put that into the
Judge
words
Brewster
of the candidate.
Judge Brewster had a good question. Let's suppose I'm running against Justice Jefferson in a precinct, and I say, I'm a lot more like you all. You know, I think more like you do. I had more common experiences than you do than my opponent. I think the next day the headline would be that I'm a racist. I didn't use any word. It's bicultural. I just said I understand more. But in context, don't you think that would be the headline, and do you think I would have a libel cause of action?
No, the headline would be Priscilla Owen, I am a racist. And then the lead is Priscilla Owen admitted at a debate
Owen,
yesterday that she was a racist.
A black can't represent this district as well as a white.
Okay, but that wasn't the headline here. If a reasonable reader, that's the test here, if a reasonable reader was looking at this article, they wouldn't know that the lead and the headline was based on simply Conrado Cantu, as they now say, saying that you need to be bicultural to understand what's happening in neighborhoods of Cameron County, which is 85% to 90% Hispanic. I mean, everyone admits that you need to be that it's a positive attribute for a candidate in Cameron County to understand what's going on in all the neighborhoods, which are predominantly Hispanic. And in order to do that, in order to understand all the communities in the neighborhoods in Cameron County, you have to be bicultural.
And therefore, if you're not bicultural, you can't be sheriff.
Right. He was saying that that's a quality that you need to have as sheriff.
Isn't it a logical implication that if you don't have that quality, you shouldn't be sheriff?
Yes, but that's not what they said. They didn't say – they made the leap to race and said nobody who's Anglo can be sheriff. They didn't say Conrado Cantu implied that Terry Vincent shouldn't be sheriff because he's bicultural. The headline was, no Anglo can ever, I mean the lead was, no Anglo can ever be sheriff of Cameron County, meaning that no Anglo in Cameron County can ever be bicultural by definition. And that is not what he said. And it's not what he meant. And even if you say it's a paraphrase, that's not the meaning, both by what Conrado Cantu testified to and by the newspaper's own witnesses.
A writer can write something that's not substantially true and still not have actual malice, I take it.
Sure.
So why is there actual malice here?
Well, for several reasons. And first, you must decide what test to apply on actual malice. And to do that, you are going to have to make a determination about whether this is a direct quotation or the equivalent or just a paraphrase. In other words, you're going to have to decide whether the Mason v. New Yorker test applies here. But if you think that a reasonable reader would think that what was reported in their mind, that Conrado Cantu actually said what the paper said he said, then the Mason test should apply. And then that's going to be a deliberate alteration test. And if you find there's a deliberate material alteration, which is really just a transfer of the substantial truth test, what they did in Mason, a transfer of that substantial truth test to actual malice. Because when a reporter does a deliberate material alteration of a quotation of what somebody said, they obviously have knowledge of what they are doing.
Well, but you may think you're just putting in another word.
Well, but if you change, that's true. And if it has the same meaning, that's fine. But if it doesn't, under Mason, then that's evidence of actual malice. Now, if you believe that the Mason test doesn't apply, then you can look to several factors. And then the test becomes the old Sullivan test of did they have knowledge of the falsity, or did they have a serious doubt as to its truth, or high degree of awareness of the falsity of the article. And you can look to several things. as I said before, Pierce testified that what he understood the term bicultural to mean was a positive, inclusive term, and that it was a positive trait to have to be sheriff of Cameron County. And he also testified that after the debate, he didn't think Cantu was a racist. But the article he wrote portrayed him as such. Now, that's evidence that Pierce knew that that leap he was making from bicultural to racism was something he knew wasn't true. That there is certainly a serious doubt or a high degree of awareness that he changed that meaning.
I'm sorry.
Perhaps did it purposefully.
The word racist is not used anywhere.
But that's the effect of the headline.
Could a person believe that it would be better to have somebody who represents the whole community without being a racist?
Well, sure.
So why is it we're so sure the article calls him a racist?
Well, certainly that was the reaction of hundreds of voters to this article.
Well, we can't hold them liable for what people...
Well...
Everybody may end up believing the newspaper said.
If Your Honor, please, I don't think this is complicated. When you look at the headline and lead, it says, no Anglo can ever be sheriff of Cameron County. When you say that somebody can't do something simply because of their race or ethnic background, I believe that's the definition of racism.
Let's say if I said that. If I said Cameron County's 90% Hispanic, it makes sense to me that the sheriff should be Hispanic in Cameron County. That looks different than if I'm a Hispanic saying that, doesn't it?
Yes, but that's not what happened here. He didn't say that anybody was excluded because of their race or ethnic background. He said you need to be bicultural, that it's a quality that a sheriff should have to be sheriff of Cameron County. And frankly, both the defendants and the plaintiff agree that that is true. In fact, the reporter who wrote this article believes that. But that's not what he wrote. And so I think that is some evidence that, in fact, if not, and I don't know what standard of review you're going to apply here, but even, I think, under any standard, that is evidence of actual malice. But there's also other evidence. You also have the testimony from the editor, George Cox, who testified that he reviewed the transcript and that he didn't think Conrado Cantu gave any impression that he was discriminatory against Anglos in any way. And that he also agreed that bicultural was an inclusive term, a positive one that referred to diversity and was not a negative, exclusive one. The publisher of the paper, Daniel Cavazos, testified that he himself considered himself to be bicultural and that he didn't think it was an exclusionary term. So you have, throughout the hierarchy of the paper, a question. You talk about undisputed evidence when you apply the clear and convincing evidence standard. Well, there's undisputed evidence about what bicultural means in this record. And it is a positive, inclusive term.
Did the three newspaper witnesses also testify that the headline was a negative term?
No, they defended their headline and their lead. But we can't be prisoners of what they say. Nobody's going to admit we screwed up. We changed the meaning, and we knew it. But you know, we have to be able to look at what they know about those words, and they testified to what those words meant to them, and that's not what they printed. And Conrado Cantu testified to what those words meant to him and what he was saying, and that's not what they wrote. And they knew it. This is a deliberate alteration. So even if you don't apply the Mason test, you still have knowledge of the falsity or certainly a high degree of awareness. And there are other things.
Let me make sure I'm understand. We're only talking about the headline, right?
Well, no, the headline and lead.
Because, I mean, as you read the article, it becomes clear what they drew the headline from. So if you read the whole thing, you can tell that it really is a reporter's spin.
Well, I'm not so sure. I disagree with that, but I would look to the newspaper's testimony themselves on this, as to what the headline and lead meant. And the testimony from the Steve Sinclair, the Knight City editor who wrote the headline, George Cox, the editor, and Daniel Cavazos, the publisher, is that that headline represents a summary of the story. In fact, the man who wrote the headline, Steve Sinclair, testified that that headline was the essence of the story.
Well, but isn't that true? I mean, I've seen a lot of headlines where I read the article and I realize the headline really is...
It's in the same sense as New Times, for example. I mean, you read a headline and it seems fantastic and odd that this little girl would be hauled away, but then you read the context, you read the story from beginning to end, and it becomes clear that it's satire. Why, along the same lines just as O'Neill was asking, why couldn't we analyze this article in the same way?
Well, you also have the lead. And the lead is a very powerful part of the article. And the lead, in fact, that Steve Sinclair, the man who wrote the headline, said that the lead was, quote, the gist of Cantu's statements.
But the article tries to capture what was said at the debate. And one thing that was said at the debate was quoted in the article. Cantu's opponent said bicultural is a barrier. He did not take bicultural to mean a positive statement at the debate. And he clearly took bicultural to mean something negative in the context of the debate. So if the reporter was about the tone of the debate, what happened at the debate, how is this...
Well, you can't define what a candidate says by what his opponent thinks.
But if you're covering the debate and you're covering what people, what was said at the debate and what was taken away from the debate by some people, he's saying this is what Benson took away from it.
Well,
and that was accurate, wasn't it?
True. And it's one thing to report that Benson thinks this. It's another thing to take what your opponent thinks and put those words in your mouth as a candidate. I mean, at the Bush-Kerry debates, you can't define what President Bush says by what Senator Kerry or his supporters think. I mean, what President Bush says and means is what President Bush says and means. If we allow newspapers to define what a candidate says by what his opponent thinks, then it will always be the most negative, false thing. You will be undermining the political process. It's one thing to report what an opponent thinks. It's another thing to take what the opponent thinks and put those words in the candidate's
mouth. Well,
if you
have a headline that said, Bush, colon, weak on defense, do we take that as a quote that Bush says he's weak on defense, or do we take that as something that someone has said about Bush in some sort of political context?
If it says Bush, colon, weak on defense, then that's something George Bush said. That's what that means. Not that Kerry, colon, Bush, weak on defense. If it says Bush, colon, weak on defense, that's George Bush saying, I'm weak on defense. That's what that means. And that's what the paper testified to. They didn't say Vincent, Cantu's a racist, or Cantu thinks no Anglo should ever be sheriff of Cameron County. They wrote, Cantu, colon, this is me, Cantu saying this. And they followed it up with the lead. And that lead was powerful. That lead got your attention. And Justice O'Neill, I disagree some, because I think if you read the article, a reasonable reader would not know that the term bicultural is what the reporter is equating with that headline and lead.
But if the headline said, Cantu is a racist, that would be okay. Because they're not attributing it to something he said. But as you read the article, you can see that that's really not true. You can make that assessment yourself. But my understanding is that the falsity you're aiming at is the newspaper says he said it.
Not as a fact story on the front page of the paper about what happened at the debate. If they run the headline, Cantu is a racist, that is a powerful lie. Well,
what if they had said, Cantu, colon, racist? And then in the body of the article, it said, well, Vincent virtually called Cantu a racist when he said bicultural is a barrier that's there because people put it there and they had some sort of story about that. But the headline was Cantu colon racist.
Well, I mean, that's a weaker case, I guess, for the plaintiff, because the body of the article explains why Cantu is being called a racist.
Does it matter that Cantu ultimately won this contest?
Excuse me?
Does it matter that Cantu ultimately won this contest?
No. And in fact, it was so close there was a recount. Although there was talk of a recount. It was a very close election, and the evidence shows that after this article came out, Cantu's campaign got a lot of animosity toward it, and it became a much closer campaign, and that was reflected in the final vote.
Thank you, Mr. Zinn. Any further questions?
Briefly in response. This wasn't a headline in the way that came out of the Wild Blue Yonder. Mr. Vinson was Angloff. Sheriff Cantu was running against an Angloff. So certainly we start with the proposition that the choice of words fits the race for the office that the two were vying, for which the two were vying. And again, I think it's important to, as Justice O'Neill pointed out, to read down and find the direct quotations in the story, the things that signal this is what Cantu actually said. It's not the way it's being redefined here, that the use of a colon is tantamount to the use of quotation marks. That's what Sheriff Cantu would have you do, but it's not the way that newspaper journalism is operated, nor could it. And preserve the flexibility, the bandwidth for free expression that marks our political discourse in this country. So if you read down in the article, the key things, of course, are direct quote to Cantu. How are you going to relate to these people? And if you don't work among the people that count, what good is experience? So, again, if you compare those direct quotes with what the copy editor toiling to come up with a shorthand description to fit headline space did to describe it, it's well within the bandwidth for rational interpretation as a matter of law. It's well within any test for falsity as a matter of law. He argues simply that a change of meaning gets you to a tribal issue of actual malice. Does the sheriff's counsel. And again, we're falling back perilously close to a strict liability standard. It's that's the test for falsity. The reason that was developed in the Mason case is because we had a finding in the courts below that the alterations of the direct quotations in that case had occurred. There was a finding that despite the conflict in testimony, yes, this is what you said, no, it isn't. The court took that as it should have there and said that there's evidence of alteration. We're going to start with the proposition that those direct quotes were altered. Now that we have that, we have deliberate alteration. The question is, to get to a tribal issue of actual malice, is it false enough to get you there, to bring the two things together? That's not what we have here. And if, of course, you fall into the argument that is being advanced.
Is
this
whether or not it's false enough or whether it's false on its face?
Well, in the Mason case,
you have a little lie or you have a big lie. Either it's truth or not.
Is it a material change in the meaning is the argument I'm hearing from the sheriff's camp. And that is a pretty simple test of falsity. I mean, it's a pretty low threshold to get an actual malice issue in front of a jury. And if you apply it to a headline and a lead in this story, if you think you've had a lot of public official cases so far, you'll have many, many more. I mean, it is inherent in the nature of headline writing, as discussed in the briefs by us and by the
How do you determine if the headline is to summarize the gist of a political speech, or not is intended to influence the outcome of an election?
The intent to influence is not part of the equation with respect to Justice Medina. The question about whether motive can enter into it was talked about by this court at some length in a number of your recent decisions, and notably as recently as New Times, I believe, and it was determined that, going back to what you decided in Benton, that unless there is a piece of evidence that shows doubt expressed by the publisher prior to publication. You can't tack an "I don't really like this candidate" thread into the equation and come up with a tribal issue of actual malice. Motive by itself doesn't get you there. And falsity, the way they're trying to define it here, is not a test for action for a tribal issue of actual malice, even if there's bad motive that goes with it. We would ask the court to.
Thank you. That concludes the arguments in this clause and the arguments this morning. And the marshal will now adjourn.